Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. We just got done exploring the folklore of witches and broomsticks in a very racy way. And
dare we say titillating? I don't know.
Buttilating, maybe?
There was a lot of butt stuff in that episode. We probably should have put a specific trigger warning.
Right. Well, we hope you enjoyed that one because we're keeping the Halloween.
I like that. Leave it in.
We're keeping the Halloween train rolling. And shout out to anybody who just got their great seasonal nickname. We talked about giving ourselves spooky nicknames. So I would like to get some suggestions for the audience. For now, I'm Ben.
Yes. We talked about this, Super Producer Casey Pegram. I think we're all big fans of the Simpsons Halloween special Treehouse of Horror credit names.
Yes.
Isn't one of them just like Dead in the middle?
Yes.
You know, like, yeah.
Instead of Ed.
Oh, Ed. Okay. So that does have to rhyme or be connected in some way. So my middle name is Christian. How about this? Noel Satan Brown.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. There we go.
Okay. All right.
I was thinking, I had a list somewhere, but obviously I've lost it. I was thinking Casey Crypt Keeper Pegram.
Hey, I like the Crypt Keeper.
That's pretty good.
Me too.
Got the alliteration going.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It also implies that you're sort of an administrative role.
Right. I think the rules are it needs to have alliteration or be a pun or rhyme. I think those are like our three tiers. And I think Noel Satan Brown sounds pretty cool too. Like people's actual name is evil. Anyway, we're doing spooky stuff. You can't see our Zoom call today, but I am very conscious, gentlemen, of your hands because today, this show is all about hands in a very, very grisly way because we know that if you are a fan of fairy tales or fantasies or horror stories, then you're familiar with the idea of magical items, right? Didn't we do an episode on grimoires here? Or is that stuff they don't want you to know?
Yeah, it all blurs together, Ben.
That might have been stuff they don't want you to know. Grimoire is not ringing a podcast bell for me.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into that in this one. And, you know, if you want a little bit of a precursor, you should go check out the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know episode on grimoires.
Yeah, a grimoire is a magical work, you know, it's a book of spells or a book of incantations, instructions, and so on, and they're real.
Ben, a quick point of order. You know, some people say memoir, mm-hmm. and some people say memoir.
Mm-hmm.
Do some people say grimoire, and some people say grimoire?
Probably, yeah, definitely. Casey is nodding.
I think that's the thing, yeah.
With earnestness, yeah, I think so. We also see stories of magical clothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as it turns out, these stories aren't just made up by some especially creative authors hallucinating or something. Human history is chock full of real life things that were, and in some cases still are, considered imbued with magic powers. In fact, there are so many more than you might assume. In today's episode, we're going to explore one of the most morbid magical items in human history, the Hand of Glory.
Doesn't sound so bad. That sounds kind of nice.
Yeah. It sounds like maybe the hand that makes the winning pitch in a baseball game or something.
Exactly.
Years later, there's some guy in a bar somewhere, and he's holding up his hand, and he's like, this is the hand that won the World Series, the Hand of Glory.
Everything it touches is imbued with like a holy golden light.
Mm-hmm. And light does play a role. Like, okay, this is a weirdly specific one. Think of it this way. Let's say you are a professional second story artist somewhere in medieval Europe.
I am a professional second story artist.
Are you familiar with that term?
No.
It's a euphemism for a thief.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Okay, I don't want to derail it too quickly, but what is the reference?
It's the idea that you would break into the second story of a building.
Got it.
Get that five-finger discount.
Mm-hmm. With them glory hands.
There you go.
Yes. Let's say that you're a second story artist, you're a thief in medieval Europe, and you are set to pull a life-changing heist. There's only one problem. There are dozens of people inside this building, and you have to make sure that they do not wake up when you break in and that they're asleep for long enough for you to get away safely. Luckily, you have a special piece of equipment from a thief, someone who tried a job like this weeks, days, or even centuries ago.
Yeah, it's true. And that piece of kit that in question here is the Hand of Glory, which is a severed, preserved, mummified, shriveled hand formerly belonging to an executed criminal, particularly the left hand. And we talked about this off mic last week. I am left-handed in that I write with my left hand. I do pretty much everything else with my right hand and have so few occasions these days to actually write.
Hold on, though. Moment of appreciation for the sentence, I write with my left hand.
That's a good one. That's a good one. That should go on a ridiculous history shirt that you can buy one day at tpublic.com. But, you know, other than like signing credit card receipts, I don't write very much anymore. Everything's bashed out on this antiquated Apple keyboard that I have that sounds like machine gun fire whenever I type. But I digress. The point is, I think it's interesting that like redheads and left-handed people somehow are evil. Or get lumped into this idea of being sinister or wicked in some way.
Right. I mean, just look at the etymology of the word sinister. So the interesting thing here is, yeah, the left hand was usually preferred for the Hand of Glory, but you'll also see accounts that say it must be the pickled, amputated right hand of a criminal. Here's the thing. In general, if you are looking to make a Hand of Glory, it depends on the crime for which the criminal was executed. If they are executed for being a murderer, then you want to find the hand that has done the deed, right? And that's the hand you need. That's the magically powerful hand. This concept of cutting off someone's hand and ritualistically preserving it for magical purposes dates at least as far back as the 1600s. That's when we see the folkloric Hand of Glory mentioned. It's mentioned in a book. I thought you guys would love this. It's mentioned in a book called The Petit Albert, The Little Albert. It is a grimoire. It is the cutest name for a book of dark magic that I have ever seen. It's a compendium of folk magic, alchemical lore, and Kabbalistic invocations, enchantments, and so on from France. And this was published. It was distributed in different languages across Europe. The thing about this book is our pal Little Albert has a step-by-step guide on creating a Hand of Glory.
Boy, does he ever. And it's delightfully detailed. It goes as such. Take the right hand or the left hand. He doesn't care. He doesn't seem to have a preference.
Get a foot, huh? Why not?
Sure, why not? Take the right or left hand of a felon who is hanging from a gibbet beside a highway, which I assume is sort of like a pike or, a pole.
It's the thing that people are hung from or hanged from.
Yeah, they would need a little crane bit at the top, right?
Right.
To allow for proper hanging. So a gibbet beside a highway. Apparently highways were lousy with these things back in the day. Just hanged criminal bodies just littering the side of the road. Wrap it in part of a funeral pall, which is sort of muslin, kind of, right? Like a cheesecloth almost material. And so wrapped, squeeze it well. Squeeze it well. Then put it in an earthenware vessel with zimmet, nitre, salt, and long peppers. The whole well powdered. I'm assuming nitre is sort of like nitrate, like things that are like a preservative, right?
Yeah, exactly. Potassium nitrate. So we've got our marinade here. And the author of Little Albert says, leave it in this vessel for a fortnight, then take it out and expose it to full sunlight during the dog days, the hot, sultry days of July and early August, until it becomes quite dry. If the sun is not strong enough, then put it in an oven with fern and vervain. Next, make a candle from the fat of a gibbeted felon, virgin wax, sesame, and pony, P-O-N-I-E, and use the hand of glory as a candlestick to hold this candle when lighted, and then those in every place into which you go with this baneful instrument shall remain motionless.
I love the word vervain. Put it in an oven with fern and vervain. I'm assuming it's another kind of herb of some sort. This all sounds, the way this is described with, you know, the long peppers and the herbs and spices.
Casserole
doesn't
vibe.
Doesn't sound too bad, yeah. Also, the turns of phrase here are epic. Gibbeted, give me a break. Virgin wax, sesame, and pony. I don't know what pony is, but it sounds really whimsical.
Yeah, we'll get to this. It is interesting because there are vagaries in this description, kind of like George Washington's weird instructions for his, what was that, eggnog?
Eggnog, the boozy eggnog. Yeah, it's almost like his magic stuff isn't an exact science.
Oh, wow. How could you say something so brave yet so controversial?
Hot take, I know. So what was the point, okay? What was like? What did this magical, disgusting, creepy mummy hand give the bearer?
It's a great question. In old European folklore, the Hand of Glory was specifically useful for thieves. It functioned as a kind of grisly skeleton key. So one of the powers was attributed to it was the idea that it could unlock any door it came across, but that wasn't the main power, right?
Wait, like, so do you jam its little mummy finger into the lock?
Unclear.
Unclear.
You okay. Hold it up, so you have to light it somehow, whether you're lighting the tips of the fingers or whether you have it holding that candle made of human fat. The idea, I think, is that you hold it to the door and the door's like, oh, tight, and then opens.
You know, I definitely, now that you're saying it like this, I feel like I've seen a finger candle mummy thing as set dressing in like Tales from the Crypt or something like that, or some spooky laboratory scene, you know, or a wizard's lair or what have you. But here's the thing. Yeah, to unlock the full potential of the Hand of Glory, you have to kind of, there's some really specific orders of operation to the whole procedure. Earlier, we mentioned the basic criteria was that it came from a hanged criminal. Presumably, if you just happened upon this hanged criminal, you wouldn't really know what crime this person had committed. So a little extra knowledge goes a long way, as we know. So we've talked about the basics of a Hand of Glory from Lil Albert. You know, his was pretty, I would say that's the most like kind of 101 version of making a Hand of Glory. But it turns out to really get the full, you know, bang for your morbid buck, there's a kind of an order of operations, sort of a ghastly combo of sorts, right? Ben, you found this story. I think it makes sense for you to kind of walk us through some of the options here and some of the more elaborate versions of this device.
Ah, yes. Yes, you do have more than one option with a Hand of Glory. You know, it's kind of like how there are different flavors of M&Ms. They're all still M&Ms, but they have, you know, different strokes for different folks. You could have a Hand of Glory wherein that human fat candle is somehow placed on the hand or embedded in it. And in that version, the hand has the power to render everyone who sees it motionless, other than presumably the magician or criminal holding it. And then in another version, just the human fat is not good enough. You also have to take the dead criminal's hair and use that as the wick of the candle. In that version, when you burn this candle, you get a light that's invisible to everyone else other than the person holding the hands. There's also the idea that you could just light the tips of the fingers that would provide the same powers. But, you know, individual mileage may vary.
That's right. And the fingertip light version is the one that I kind of picture as like set dressing material for, you know, some kind of like macabre B movie or something like that, like an Elvira type situation. Ben, back to the human hair real quick. That's kind of gross. Not that any of this stuff isn't gross, but yeah. I mean, what do you, like, you wax it up a little bit so it sort of burns slower? Because in my experience, human hair just kind of goes up in a poof, you know? Don't know that it would slow burn unless you treated it in some way. Maybe, like I said, coated it in wax like you would a wick.
That's smart. I like that you're solution-oriented here. I also think it's hilarious that that's the line for you. For me, the human hair just smells terrible when it burns. You know,
it does smell terrible. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine that human fat smells particularly appetizing when you burn it either.
These are questions that our pal Little Albert does not explain. I'm having such a hard time saying Petit Albert or Little Albert without doing a baby voice. It's just the most ridiculous name for like a Necronomicon book.
Right. It has zero gravitas. It makes me think of Little Abner or Prince Albert, perhaps.
Two very different things.
Different Alberts. Yeah, it's true. And again, we've got a couple of different potential powers that come along with this thing. I love the idea of the skeleton key. Don't quite understand the logistics of it. Does it magically just give you like mystical lock picking powers, or do you actually cram the finger into the lock? Remember that movie House? I always remember seeing the box of it. I never saw it. I've seen clips and it's very bad, but the box freaked me out when I was a kid because there's this severed hand
reaching for a doorbell.
Yeah, no, there's one with a key though. There's a sequel where the finger is a key and it's going into the lock or something like that. Maybe I'm making that up.
No, they made like four or five House movies. I think.
Exactly.
I never saw the original because it was rated R and I was too young to rent it. But House 2 was like PG or PG-13. So I watched that when it was terrible.
That's pretty forward thinking. I didn't think they did PG-13 horror movies until more like the Japanese horror reboot period, glory days of the early aughts. Yeah.
They did. I mean, there's a great calculation here. This may be more appropriate for you guys' other show, Movie Crush, but there's quite a successful franchising trend in which you start off with straight up horror. And then as you get to the sequels, it becomes increasingly camp and increasingly comedic, right? Evil Dead.
And I feel like that's what happened with House, because it seemed like it was more of a legit horror movie, maybe the first one. But the second one was just kind of all over the place and silly. So that could have been what happened there.
Also, there's a hand of glory in Angel Heart, which I think I mentioned in a previous episode. With Mickey Rourke and Robert De Niro as a very, like, as the devil who went to a nail salon, basically.
Yeah, and he's got a really on-the-nose, like, human name that basically means the devil. Yeah. What is it? Is it like an anagram or something really, like, obvious and dumb like that?
It's almost as bad as, like, Mr. Nataz or something.
By the way, the house box, it is ringing the doorbell, but you could see in my memory of a child, seeing this as a child, you could very easily mistake it for a finger going into a lock, because it's sort of a profile shot of this, like, severed hand, and now that I'm looking at it, it is ringing like an old-timey doorbell, but it also kind of looks like a doorknob, and the finger is bony on the tip, and it makes me think of, like, a key situation. So.
Well, Noel, yeah, the cover for House 2, it is a key, so I think you're remembering it properly. You just saw House 2 instead of House 1.
Okay.
Oh, my God. You guys, I just remembered Robert De Niro's character's name in Angel Heart is Louis Cipher.
Oof.
Louis, yes! Yes!
That's brutal.
Louis Cipher! I knew
it! That's right up there with, like, and here's our newest visitor from Europe, Professor Alucard.
Yes. Or Thad Evil.
Right.
Professor Thaddeus Evil.
Yes. I think it's unfair that you're accusing Mr. Antagonist of, no,
exactly. No, that's foul word. Play of some sort. How dare you, right. Sir?
You've seen the Hand of Glory before in fiction, even if you didn't know what it was. It's in great comic books like The Invisibles, which I highly recommend. It's clearly that cover of House is kind of a callback to it, right? It's a severed hand attempting to open a door. And of course, many of our fellow ridiculous historians in the audience today are shouting, I know, like a particular thing where I've seen this, Angel Heart, or of course, The Wicker Man, 1973 version. But this has some other oddly specific powers too, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's one other one that we should mention.
Absolutely. And I was actually getting to it earlier when we got derailed by the whole house video box finger key child memory discussion. But one of the other powers is this notion that the hand could put everyone in a house into a deep magical slumber or even something like a coma. And that was so that you could go in and do your dirty work and you know, steal the silver or whatever.
Yeah, it's a bit like the broomstick question. It sounds normal if you're used to it, but if you're coming into this new, it's weirdly specific. How on earth did someone conceive of this? It's a tricky question, and the answer might be found in etymology. There's an etymologist named Walter Skeet who says the actual phrase hand of glory might be an example of what we call folk etymology. Folk etymology is like when you, over time, see a word or phrase change because somewhere in the great telephone game of history, people replaced an unfamiliar word or phrase with a more familiar one. And Casey, I thought you would especially like this. The phrase itself derives from a French phrase, man de glory, which is...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, like man de la gloire or something like that, yeah.
Exactly. It's a corruption of mandrake. And there's a book called Leechdoms, which is a much less cute name than Little Albert, that describes a mandrake as shining by night altogether like a lamp. And so the phrase got corrupted into the English phrase, hand of glory. But even if that was just like an old typo or an old mispronunciation, people believed it, and they started really making these things because it turns out human beings have attributed magical powers to the hands of the dead for a long, long, dare I say, inglorious time.
Yeah, and you know, and folks might remember, I think mandrakes were in Harry Potter, but also in Pan's Labyrinth. There was a whole thing where you put a mandrake root into like a bowl of milk and put it under somebody's bed, and it'll... end a pregnancy or so. There's all kinds of this is very similar to that type of magical thinking, you know, where if you take a turnip and peel it using a rusty, you know, spoon once belonging to a hedge knight or something like that, and then you put it in a mason jar. This, I'm mixing all this stuff up from history. None of these things existed together at the same time. You get what I'm saying. But the name aside, it turns out that humans have been fascinated with all of this type of stuff, folklore, magical powers, the hands of the dead, all of this for a very, very long time. In Sharia law, in particular, and in medieval Europe, publicly amputating a criminal's body part, often the one used to commit the crime, was a particularly potent form of punishment. It certainly sent a message, and the pain was part of the punishment, but also it marked you. It was like a scarlet letter of sorts, so people would know that you were a thief or what have you.
Mm-hmm. And it was a warning to any other people in the crowd who may have considered violating the laws. This is very, very old. It dates back to what the first like written code of laws that we know of, the Code of Hammurabi. That's the Babylonian code of laws that dates back to ancient Mesopotamia, what we call Iraq today. The sixth Babylonian king, Hammurabi, wrote down this set of laws that dates somewhere back like into 1772 BCE, somewhere around there. It's one of the oldest translated writings in the world. It has 282 laws, some of which are very, very harsh, and it has scaled penalties. One of those things is the famous or infamous eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. So you steal the bread, the hand that has committed the offense is removed. And we see these commonalities, some of the same things you're talking about, the idea of punishment of like for like, and the belief in sympathetic magic. The logic here is, what better way to perform a successful robbery than to enlist the help of a former thief? I have a huge problem with this logic, you guys, because technically, aren't you getting the help of a very unsuccessful thief? A thief so unsuccessful that they got caught and executed?
Yeah, it's true. I didn't really think about that, Ben, but you have a good point there. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't necessarily have to do with the skill of the individual. It's just more what they represent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this is all about optics, right? It's all about representation or the idea of a, you know, let's say you needed like a squirrel or something as an ingredient for some sort of potion. It wouldn't necessarily have to be like the most virile squirrel in the entire universe. Just a squirrel will do. Any thief will do for this situation. Skills be damned.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's definitely that's definitely the approach that folks were taking when they were practicing this magic. And without spoiling it, we do have some stuff that we'll get to toward the end of today's episode that shows you what makes the Hand of Glory different from so many other grisly stories of magical items. But back to those creepy hands.
Mm-hmm.
So little Albert's helpfulness aside, there was a lot of debate about the instructions, even when the book first came out. Go back to the word pony, P-O-N-I-E, for instance. Does that word refer to horse dung, or is it a specific type of sesame? People were still fighting over the interpretation of the original French. Was it du sesame et de la pony, which is horse? Or was it du sesame de Lapone, sesame of Lapland? Two very different things.
I'm definitely leaning more towards the horse excrement here. Lapland, how does that even make sense? How could you use the whole of Lapland in your recipe? One tiny backtrack, I just want to bring this up, a blast from the past. Didn't Josh Clark used to have the nickname Josh Creepy Hands Clark? Did I make that up? Jonathan Strickland, the quizzer, used to call him Josh Creepy Hands Clark.
That was probably my fault, actually.
Really?
Well, you know, I am with nicknames.
Oh, yeah. But where does this come from, though, Ben? Does he have particularly odd-looking hands? Are they small?
I can't remember. This dates back to possibly the Brain Stuff days. So when I was running the writing side of Brain Stuff videos, and we had a bunch of our colleagues coming in as hosts. Casey, you and I were working on this in the past. I also read a lot of the YouTube comments along with our pal Lauren Vogelbaum, and we'd have to respond to some of these questions and such. And one of my favorite weird questions was on a video that Josh did one time, again, years and years ago, where they said, how come his hands are so weird, but his arms are normal? And I still don't know what they meant by that.
Uh-huh. I got it. Okay.
He doesn't have weird hands. He has normal, beautiful person hands.
Okay. Just making sure. I'm sorry. It just came to mind talking about all this creepy hand stuff.
Well, in the words of Britney Spears, oops, we did it again.
I'm trying to think of a severed hand pun for a Britney Spears lyric. It's not coming to mind immediately.
You
but
played with my hand?
Is that a thing? Or is
no,
that a,
that sounds, like that, played with my heart? No, that's
isn't that Backstreet Boys?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Stop playing games with my hand.
That's good.
There we go. Good save, good. Casey.
Not Britney Spears, but it'll do. It'll do.
Gotta hand it to you, Casey. This has turned into a two-part episode. We've got some more stuff on the way. We've got some surprising revelations in the modern day, and we're just scratching the surface of morbid magical items, this one in particular.
Yep, scratching the surface with a creepy, cursed mummy hand. That's what we're doing. But we'll be back to do more surface scratching. Mm. That sounds weird. But I'm going to leave it. In the meantime, you can check us out on social media. We're Ridiculous History on Instagram and Twitters and Facebook and all the things. We like to point people to the Ridiculous Historians, our fan page, dare we say community, on Facebook, where you too can share silly history memes and have conversations with your fellow Ridiculous Historians.
Yes. Yes, we'd love to hear from you. We'd also like to give some shout outs. Thanks as always to Alex the Abomination Williams. I'm doing it. We're doing nicknames, who composed our track. Thanks to Casey the Crypt Keeper Pegram.
Huge thanks to Christopher Hacksaw Hasiotis, here in ghostly spirit, looming over us like some sort of sinister fog.
And we were looking for a good nickname for Eves. Casey, you knocked it out of the park.
Just, you can't go wrong with the alliteration. So Eves, Jack-o'-lantern, Jeffcoat.
And who is Halloween? We kept that one in.
I love it. I'm using it. I mean, I you know, it's like, you've seen that the new Adam Sandler movie, Hubie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to see it. I haven't watched it yet.
I watched it. It was, you know, dumb, but cute and entertaining. I very much enjoyed it, actually. It's you know, just dirt stupid, but he's like a kind of, he's basically the water boy who really likes Halloween, but inexplicably is terrified of every part of it, but loves it. But, like, you know, goes into like existential fits of horror if someone like spooks him or like wears creepy makeup, and yet he adores Halloween, but he's more in it for, like, you know, keeping the kids safe. It's a little confusing, the character, but that could be a Halloween, you know, someone who really just digs Halloween, like David S. Pumpkins, you know?
Yeah, I'm thinking also maybe Wayne's World special, Halloween's World.
Mm-hmm, that's good.
Also, true story, apparently Adam Sandler wants to take all of his characters and build out a shared cinematic universe with them.
Does that mean, like, there's multiple Adam Sandler characters that exist in the same world, all like played by Adam Sandler?
The man has the range for it.
you certainly could call it that.
Yeah. So maybe it's like, you know, the Nutty Professor kind of vibe. But good luck to you, Adam. And we'll see you on the flip side. Thanks also, of course, to Jonathan Strickland, aka the Spookster.
Ooh.
Thank you, Casey.
Oh, sorry. No. I am sorry. I thought you were going somewhere. I thought it was going to be Jonathan Strickland, the Spookster. Something else. I'm sorry. I completely left you hanging on that one, Ben.
I was thinking Jonathan Scarecrow Strickland.
Yeah, also an option. He is a little gaunt and sinister. I will say that. We'll see you next time, folks, to talk about more spooky, creepy hand stuff on Ridiculous History. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.